It's time for Dialogue Conspiracy with political research specialist Mae Brussel, who for 3 years has shared with us her decades research into political assassinations and abuses of power in this country. Her program relates the news of the week to emerging evidence about the conspiracy which allegedly maintains by force its control over the legislative and judicial processes in America. And now, here's Mae.
Good afternoon. This is Mae Brussel in Carmel, California. This is Dialogue Conspiracy number 203, and it's June the 30th, 1975. This week, we add KCBX-FM San Luis Obispo to our caravan of truth, the Dialogue Conspiracy, and they will become regular weekly listening audiences, and we hope to pick up more stations when college begins in the fall or through the summer. In September, Antioch College will begin subscribing to the series when their summer vacation is completed. If you are within listening range of this program regularly and you're moving away in the fall or locating to another city, be sure to write to us and contact your local FM radio station and see if they would be interested in receiving the tapes to these broadcasts that are weekly 45 minutes from KLRB in Carmel, California. The CIA is in the news this week. It's in the news every week and will be for the next 10 or 15 years. And there are multiple conspiracies and plots, and the cover-ups will be continuous for years to come, as I say. But there are loopholes to the language that members of the CIA use to get themselves off the hook for the various crimes that they are doing. When I use the term CIA, I use it as a broad umbrella which includes the use of all intelligence agencies, including the Internal Revenue and the Defense Intelligence Agency, the intelligence of the FBI that works with the CIA, their mafia connections, because at the head of the National Security Council and the 40 Committee, which is five persons, the acting head, along with Henry Kissinger now, is William Colby, who has charge of the intelligence agencies. So I claim that his responsibility for these plots and conspiracies and their continuous cover-up is now on his shoulder. He had a good part in the planning of these conspiracies through his lifetime, and now the burden of cover-up is bearing down upon him. Mr. Colby was on the national television this week, and he also was before a committee in Washington, D.C., in which he testified that the CIA does have domestic operations. He said they're operating within a U.S. domestic organization. The CIA is still operating. He said the CIA activities are being conducted within the limits of its statutory authority. And that is the catch, the limits of the statutory authority. He claims his activity is legal, but he wouldn't disclose what it was. The CIA had Operation Chaos going very well until Senator Howard Baker and a few members of the Senate Select Committee closed shop and said only the tip of the iceberg was showing. And so March 15, 1974, Operation Chaos, that is described just briefly, just a little bit of it in the Rockefeller Commission report on the CIA domestic activities, they closed shop March 15, 1974. Certain agents that were involved illegally in domestic work were not fired. They're not prosecuted. Men like Mr. Ober were simply moved to the Pentagon or the National Security Council. A few agents, such as Mr. Angleton, retired quickly, and then after retiring were given honors and plaques for their service in the CIA, which included illegal clandestine activities in the United States for which they should have been prosecuted and sent to prison. I maintain that the last big brouhaha of the domestic agency, the largest overall plan that they could do without breaking into small splinter groups, which they're doing now, was the formation of the Symonese Liberation Army. CIA agents Colston Westbrook and Chris Thompson, who are alive, and Nancy Ling Perry, who is now dead, were the persons that formed the SLA and got certain prisoners and persons from the radical community or the lesbian community in Berkeley involved, but the CIA set this up. The technicality of whether they're agents or not is splitting hairs, because recently the agency came out and said that Gary Powers wasn't a CIA agent, even though he's flying that ill-fated U-2 plane over the Soviet Union. He simply was a hired help, or it's a technicality that he was an employee. He wasn't an agent. So the CIA is simply tearing little pieces apart of their agency and hiding the fact that they are behind the funding of many operations. Still are. Mr. Colby came out yesterday and said that three agents were disclosed to have infiltrated American dissident groups. To testify about three agents is absolutely ridiculous, asinine, when they have an operation so large that it runs into billions of dollars, and they will not disclose this kind of activity. To narrow it down to three agents is childish, simplistic, and insulting. There's certain people like Billy Joe Kesey, a CIA man who was involved in the murder of John Patterson, the envoy to Mexico. This case was quickly hushed up. The trial was over. It was like a James Earl Ray trial. It was a very quickie trial. Kesey was only charged with writing a ransom letter, not with the murder. The serious charges weren't placed on him. And there are about 30 kidnappings that took place immediately after the kidnapping of Patty Hearst in February of 64 that would smell of what you may say former CIA agents, but are still part of the agency because the agency is protecting them, protecting their arrest and their trials, and they were working for them at the time these operations took place. There are four big legacies of domestic CIA, and I want to explain those because from time to time on Dialogue Conspiracy, I dwell at one or two or three or four of these at various times, but continuously. And these are the areas of domestic intelligence, counterintelligence, that is shaping the course of America in years to come, whether we're going to be able to have elections again or whether we're going to have a fascism. The four faces of the Central Intelligence Agency, number one, are the many political assassinations and their subsequent cover-ups. The second is the manipulation of every election since 1956 by the CIA. When John Kennedy won in 1960, the wheels were set to assassinate him, and ever since then, we've had elections by blackmail and bullets. The third and yet unrevealed story of the CIA, the horrendous story, is the story of mind control, behavior modification, psychosurgery, hypnosis, turning people into zombies and robots. And the fourth is the area of domestic violence and bombings and arson. And these four areas cover killings and plots and counterplots that will someday be fingered to the Central Intelligence Agency. There's so much news coming out every day about the fact that Oswald was part of a conspiracy, that he didn't shoot a gun. That story is 11 years old, and it will take hopefully less than 11 years to recognize that the assassinations and their cover-up, the election manipulation, the mind control, domestic violence and bombings are actually taking place now under the guise of being individual instances that are happening, but they're not really. They are well-planned conspiracies, specific doctors, specific agencies covering up. The CIA can say they're not involved in these things because they bring in Cuban exiles, Russian exiles. They use the mafia, the underworld, and now the Vietnamese exiles. So they can say that the anti-Castro Cuban Alpha 66 that does bombings in Los Angeles is not currently a CIA operation. These people were brought in by the CIA, they were given their citizenships by the CIA, and they are directly involved in domestic, the opposite of tranquility. It's chaos, and it is still Operation Chaos going on. We've brought people in from Yugoslavia, members of the dreaded Ustashi that I've talked about before, and there was a new bombing in New York last week, and I'll read to you about it. And the Yugoslavian embassy from the United Nations accused the police department of protecting the Ustashi, that they were the ones who were bombing in New York, and I've maintained on this program that they have been behind terrorism and bombing around the world, particularly in California area, in Los Angeles. Last week, we saw the murder of Sam Giancana, a witness for the CIA, the link of the CIA to the mafia, who was going to testify in Washington, D.C. He was blown up in his own home, and the newspaper comes out today with theories. They can speculate, the Associated Press, United Press, the government, can speculate that the mafia killed Giancana. And they come out with their theories without one basis of fact. They never once have speculated that any government agent was behind these major conspiracies. Giancana had police guards and around the house, around the clock, except when he was shot. And one of the guards said that they heard a soda pop bottle open, and then they took a 20-minute break. And when they came back, Giancana was dead. The guards are used in political conspiracies. You know how Oswald was killed in the police department. Fred Hampton, the Black Panther leader, was killed by his protector and bodyguard. Robert Kennedy was shot from the back of the head by his bodyguard from Lockheed. The bodyguards, the police that are protecting, are not protecting, and they very often in these criminal conspiracies have a very big role to play. And very often, as you keep unraveling the story, Malcolm X, his murder, again, the same bodyguard that's later out with Fred Hampton in Chicago, the names overlap and weave in and out and reappear at other murders. Mr. Colby headed the dreaded Phoenix program in Vietnam, and now he is home in the United States, and he admits that CIA operations are taking place in the United States, but he doesn't go into details naturally. I want to ask a question. I have evidence here. It's called coincidence or plot. It has to do with the Robert Kennedy assassination. Many times we talk at length that murders pertain close to the John Kennedy assassination. But I just got a letter from Ted Chirac, who made the movie The Second Gun, and he has a new information sheet out. And just to run down these people that were killed and or lives threatened, and you ask yourself, how could all of this happen in just the short years since Robert Kennedy was killed, that these witnesses have all been threatened? And isn't the intelligence agency getting their finger into erasing, that you are erasing the witnesses to the major assassinations and conspiracies, so when the truth comes out, we won't have the witnesses to testify? Carl Uecker, the maitre d' at the Ambassador Hotel, was a star witness to the case. His family was threatened. They left this country and went back to Germany. He was warned that his son would be killed, and Carl Uecker's son was murdered on the streets of Los Angeles. William Harper, the crime expert who testified against Duane Wolfer, was fired at while driving his auto during a post-investigation study of the evidence of the Robert Kennedy assassination. Kathy Fumer, who allegedly was the polka dot dress girl in the Ambassador Hotel who shouted, "We shot him," and her role was much greater than the authorities admitted at the time or didn't even bring up at Sirhan's trial. She was discovered dead during the time of Sirhan's trial under mysterious circumstances with some cryptic message over mirror in her Hollywood hotel. Rona Isaacs, a researcher, legal aide to Godfrey Isaacs, Sirhan's attorney, was in Carmel, California, and received a crank call and had sudden death. She went downstairs from her hotel or room at the motel and had something to eat and went back up to the room and turned purple, and she died very quickly over here at Community Hospital in Carmel. Betty Dreyer, the wife of Alice Dreyer, was attacked by two suspects. They came in the house. They made some remark about the investigation Ted Chirac was doing, and they attacked her with a knife, and she was almost fatally wounded. Ken Krasny from Los Angeles, a newspaper man from TV who had interviewed D.A. Bush on this cover-up, was arrested and confined and sent to California Psychiatric Institution. D.A. Bush, who is very active in the Los Angeles area, or was, incidentally, up to this week, was found dead. He had a heart attack, and D.A. Bush was instrumental in his office in the Los Angeles official's office in the Manson investigation. Bugliosi was the one who prosecuted the Manson case, but Bush has been very much part of the Evel Younger team, along with the other authorities who've kept a lid on these criminal conspiracies, and he's the man who made a long list of charges against Patty Hearst after the others were burned in Los Angeles without positive proof that Patty Hearst was in that van, no fingerprints or proof that she was in that van, and they've charged her with these various crimes. D.A. Bush died this week. Another concerned citizen, Walt Emerson, who put up money for the movie The Second Gun, who was very concerned about who shot Robert Kennedy, was constantly harassed by the Los Angeles District Attorney's Office. He was indicted on false charges. He was fighting them in the court. He went out to use the telephone. Somebody went up to him and made remark about his association with the Robert Kennedy assassination. and Walt Emerson died on the floor outside the courtroom. Sirhan's brother, Saidaliah, S-A-I-D-A-L-I-A-H, was shot at while driving on a Pasadena freeway, about to have an appointment with somebody who I know in the Los Angeles area, who I suspected through various contacts and associates of being a CIA agent. He was on the way to meet this particular person, and he was shot on the Pasadena freeway. Crispin Gonzalez, a friend of Sirhan's, was found hanging in a jail, Juarez, Mexico, shortly after the assassination of Robert Kennedy, after the police and FBI located messages linking him to Sirhan on the Robert Kennedy assassination. Stuart Whitman is a Hollywood star who gave support to Theodore Chirac and his probe, and one night at his Malibu beach home, he was taken away and assaulted, handcuffed, under protest, and the county sheriff's department had to come. He was removed. Donald Shulman, the eyewitness that another gun, a second gun, was pulled out behind Robert Kennedy, in addition to the one that Sirhan fired. Donald Shulman was intimidated. He was fired, and he's gone into hiding. When the movie The Second Gun came out, he went into hiding, and he's not available at this time. And Thane Eugene Caesar has vanished from the California area, and he's the man who's been named as having fired the second gun behind Robert Kennedy that could be the fatal shots. Ron Wood, a friend of Sirhan's at San Quentin, was writing articles to letters to Playboy magazine. He wanted to write the true story of what happened to Robert Kennedy. And as soon as his letters were sent out from a Nevada jail, Ron Wood was found hung in a Nevada jail, and he died. Robert Hyde has information of who killed Robert Kennedy and John Kennedy. He was threatened of having his brain erased at Vacaville. We've talked about that on many shows before. When that was halted, he was sent back to Soledad and then to Folsom, where there were four contracts. Various persons were asked to kill him. Law enforcement officials, the guards at the prison, had told various persons that they'd never get out of jail. They'd be in there for life if they didn't kill Robert Hyde. Each one of these was exposed on KLRB, luckily, and through letters and calling the various wardens. And those murders were called off, and Robert Hyde still has his brains, but they were going to tamper with his mind. Now, that is the kind of activity on the Robert Kennedy assassination, and I think that Mr. Colby has a lot to explain. I think the CIA can't be cleared of domestic activities involving the SLA unless certain questions, basic questions, are answered. I could list 30 of them, but I have three favorite ones, and I think that the answer to these would help provide the clue to future terrorism and prove that the United States is being threatened in every city by the CIA disguised under Nazi cover or terrorist cover. One of the clues is who wrote Black Abductor. It was published in San Diego in 72. This is the script of the Hearst kidnapping. It came out, there's a non-existent publisher, a non-existent author that never surfaced. And I think if there had been no Watergate story, if they hadn't been caught June 1972, the kidnapping would have been on time. The book was published. Nobody knows who wrote it, who published it. And this is the script. And I think it's like the diaries or the scripts of the other political assassinations. The second question I would like to know is who created the double of Donald DeFries? Only the Central Intelligence Agency could take the information in data banks and computer banks and come up with a person who knew everything about Donald DeFries and emulate him. This man is Bernard Keaton. Nobody has seen a picture of him or knows where he is today, but he did surface after Donald DeFries was killed or after Patty Hearst was kidnapped. And then the other question is, why were the Jack Scotts not arrested for providing food or transportation or safe houses for Patty and Emily Hearst? But the important thing about the CIA activities is that Mr. Colby says we're operating in the United States today, but it's legal. And it's legal for this reason. The CIA is not supposed to be working domestically. It's supposed to be working overseas. But by saying Patty Hearst is in Hong Kong, see how convenient that is. They can keep tracing Patty and look for her in the Orient. And on the other hand, They can say Emily William Harris were in Illinois this week walking around. Somebody had their ID card, somebody similar in appearance and identical birth dates, so that the FBI and the local police department can intrude through the summer months on every young couple, whether white or black, or whether they have long hair or short hair, otherwise enjoying their summer vacations. This is carte blanche to work domestically. The CIA, the FBI can work domestically at every commune and every place they want to break in under the guise of looking for Patty Hearst. But then the CIA gets its credibility, and it isn't illegal because they can say there may be mail coming across from Patty Hearst from Hong Kong. So by placing Patty Hearst in Hong Kong and the Harrises in Illinois, the CIA isn't working illegally. According to Colby, it's their statutory authority. And this will continue, and the stories can give the excuse for the agency to cover any continent they want. It was interesting, when I was back in New York, I heard Fletcher Prouty speak. He was a liaison of the CIA to the Pentagon for many years. He wrote the book, The Secret Team. And he said that the Pentagon knew that Patty Hearst was getting a passport last summer, just a year ago, after the shootout in Los Angeles and in the fall when they were in Pennsylvania. And he also suggested that Emily and William Harris are agents, narcotic agents, which I put in my Realist article. And Prouty has said that. He hasn't given enough of information of this on the news service, but he did say publicly that the Pentagon or suggested is supplying or was supposed to supply the passport for Patty Hearst, which is no different than the State Department giving Lee Harvey Oswald his passport and returning him home from the Soviet Union to continue his espionage work at home. Well, there was a story getting away from the domestic CIA SLA. There was a story in the Sacramento Bee last Sunday called The Bizarre Story on the Killing of JFK. And it was based upon information given by Richard Popkind, who's a well-known researcher. He wrote a book, The Second Oswald. He's a professor at Washington University, St. Louis, Missouri. And Popkind claims that he has documents naming the killer of Kennedy, the mechanism of the plot, the agents involved, and it shows that Oswald didn't act alone. Much of those documents came out just today in the National Tatler, and I'll read to you as much time as we have about these. If we run short of time, go to your newsstands and be sure and buy the July 13th National Tatler. It has a front page picture saying, "These men murdered President John Kennedy." And there's a picture of Lauren Hall, Eugene Hale Brading, Clay Shaw, David Ferry, and Lee Harvey Oswald. Well, Popkind has documents that pertain to these particular killers. He says they relate particularly to a U.S. Army captain named Richard Case Nagel, who was a CIA agent prior to the assassinations. And Nagel was supposed to be involved in the assassination plot to kill John Kennedy. He didn't do it. What he did was he went to a police department and shot a gun and got himself arrested and got an alibi. So that was September 26, 1963, to get out of being part of the assassination plan. He went into an El Paso bank September the 20th, 1963, fired a gun in the ceiling and waited to be arrested. But he says if he's guaranteed immunity, he'll testify that a meeting took place in September 1963, that Oswald attended the meeting with two fake Cuban G2 intelligence agents in Jackson Square, New Orleans, and that they were members of a violence-prone faction of the CIA, and they were financed by a group operating in Mexico City. And I've told you on Dialogue Conspiracy before about the money that was taken by Don Norton and David Ferry into Mexico City, where the financing money was handed over for the last stage of the operation. Now, this article says that at the meeting, the assassination of JFK was discussed, and that Mr. Nagel wrote to J. Edgar Hoover about the plot 2 months earlier, and he ignored it. That the FBI has a file number on the letter, that a letter was sent to the Warren Commission from Richard Case Nagel of the CIA, and they ignored it, and it names the actual killers. Now, one of the important things is this. He said there were killers of John Kennedy, and one was interrogated under hypnosis for 90 hours. And Richard Popkind says in this article, "I have documents indicating that the U.S. intelligence agency had a laboratory producing robot murders identical to the Manchurian candidate, and that at least one of them took part in the assassination of John Kennedy. Now, I have met in the Midwest one of the men who is a dead ringer for Oswald, who is written up in the book The Torbett Document, which is put out by Laurie in the Southwest, and also in The Kennedy Conspiracy by Paris Lamont. I met this particular man, and he's a dead ringer for Oswald, and he is one of, there were quite a few devils. There was William Seymour, and there was this particular man that I met. His name was Don Norton. And there are quite a few of Mr. Valley, another devil for Oswald, looked very much like him. But this article by Popkind goes into the fact that there were robot murderers and that at least one of the robots took part in the assassination of JFK. And I think this is interesting because he says one of the robot murderers is still at large. And when I was back at the Boston Conference of Conspiracies, one of the big differences I had with Mark Lane was that I went into mind control, psychosurgery, and the altering of people, and that it was directly related to the political assassinations. And Mark Lane accused me of being irresponsible at the time. That was one of my irresponsibilities, that the federal government takes well-known inventors and takes their inventions and then turns the men into mental vegetables and robots and uses political assassins that have been robotized. This is happening, creating the violence such as the zebra, the zombie, Zodiac killings. They're turned into zombies and ordered to kill and can't remember. This is one of the big stories, as I say, on the CIA, not only the political assassinations, but the zombies. But here's Richard Popkind, one of my coworkers, now talking about the fact that at least one of these robots took part in the murder of John Kennedy and is still at large. But these same co-workers would not acknowledge just last January, so the end of June, that this situation was taking place. Now, to learn more about the case of Richard Case Nagel, the CIA agent who's making these allegations, Richard Sprague has an article this month in Pursuit of Truth magazine. It's the same address as the Computers and People that used to be Computer and Automation. You can subscribe to this. It's a monthly newsletter coming out solely devoted to conspiracies and assassinations. And in this article, Richard Sprague talks about E. Howard Hunt being the acting station chief in Mexico City in August, September 1963, and that two CIA agents, Harry Dean and Richard Case Nagel, are beginning to talk about their activities. That's the same person quoted by Richard Popkind. And that the CIA agent Ronald Augustinovich and Mary Hope attended this meeting. There was a meeting in the apartment of Guy Gabaldin, a CIA agent. Persons attending the meeting were Clay Shaw, David Ferry, Guy Gabaldin, Albert Osborne. That's the same John Howard Bowen that's out with Oswald on the bus going down to Mexico. Harry Dean, Richard Case Nagel, William Seymour, that's one of Oswald's doubles, Emilio Santana, Ronald Augustinovich, Mary Hope, and Lee Harvey Oswald. All of these people were in Mexico City, November 1963, and were in Dallas, Texas, the day that John Kennedy was killed. They were set up at two different houses. One of the homes they stayed at was run by Tammy True, a stripper of Jack Ruby's. The Assassination of John Kennedy and the Cover-Up is the name of the article by Richard Sprague. Computer and People was the issue, and now they've called People's in the Pursuit of Truth. If you want the address, you can write 815 Washington Street, Newtonville, Massachusetts, 02160. And if that went too fast, write to me at KLRB, and I'll give you the address of where to subscribe to this newsletter, or maybe you can buy single copies. Now, the important thing about Dick Sprague's article is that he says that Clay Shaw was a member of the board of directors of an important CIA organization called the Centro Moderno Comercial. That is the international link of the Nazis. He mentions Major L.M. Bloomfield of Montreal. That's another name I mentioned in Boston that horrified the other researchers. I got up and named these names. That's just 6 months later, and they're putting them in print in these articles. It names William Seymour and various people that were involved in the assassination of John Kennedy, running the money back and forth, and it involves the Mexican connection. This article goes at great length on the CIA connections, but the important thing in my mind are the links here of Moderno Commerciale and the links of Clayshaw to the international Nazi organizations of Germany and Italy and England. The Nazi organizations are linked in many ways. In the remaining 15 minutes, I'm going into some of these links and show you, just briefly touching on them, the parts that do connect to Clayshaw and the World Nazi Organization that was set down in the Bahamas after World War II. There was an article June 26, 1975, this last week, in Jack Anderson's column, and it's called "The CIA Again?" Question mark. And it said it has to do with the Greek government has called off an investigation because the CIA asked them to, that the CIA funded money through Greece into the campaign of Richard Nixon and Spiro Agnew, that our CIA tax dollars went to Greece to an organization called the KYP and went to a Greek businessman by the name of Tom Pappas, who was a fundraiser for Richard Nixon and Spiro Agnew, and then was sent back to the Republican Committee, and the money was channeled from the CIA tax dollars to Greece to Tom Pappas, who then brought it back to Richard Nixon and Spiro Agnew. And that article just came out this week, June 26, 1975. But 3 years later, 3 years earlier rather, in The Realist, I was writing about the Watergate story in the article, "Why Was Martha Mitchell Kidnapped?" And I mentioned a few pages, page 30, I'm going to read you about three sentences from there, because I have the identical story that Jack Anderson is printing in 1975. And it had to do with the funding of Richard Nixon's campaign in 1972. It said it's the most important year in American history. The same groups of people who put Hitler into power and revived fascism in Greece are determined to maintain power and control over our lives. And they're manipulating candidates, assassinating politicians, and creating a situation whereby martial law would be necessary. The same CIA that helped fund the cancellation of elections in Greece offered Richard Nixon money he needed for his 68 election if he took political unknown Spiro Agnew as his vice president. The money to manage the election campaign is difficult to separate when you mix CIA funds with Republican money. In 1968, Nixon was offered, through CIA conduit Tom Pappas and other sources, the funding he needed for elections if he took Agnew as vice president. And then I went into a group of Nazi American military experts that were very concerned and wanted Agnew as president. I have other articles here that Spiro Agnew and Ronald Reagan are on the same team. And then I brought in other articles to show that the same military junta that was siphoning this money to Agnew was linked to the German Nazi Party years earlier. Here's an article from the London Observer in 1973 saying the CIA engineered a military coup in Greece in 1967, and they used Premier George Papadopoulos, wartime collaborator with the Nazis, to maintain control of the regime. Papadopoulos is known among the senior staff members as the first CIA agent to become premier of a European country. Papadopoulos served as a captain in a security battalion organized by the Nazis to hold down the partisans during the war. And it was this group that was funneling, the CIA was giving them money and then bringing it back to Richard Nixon if he would take Agnew as the vice president. I also have other memos about the Nazi links of Tom Pappas and the Greek military junta in another article, 1971, dated October 21st, 1971, about Pappas as a partner of Standard Oil in New Jersey. Pappas consistently exploited his political connections in Washington, D.C., and he used it to protect the military junta. It said he worked with Secretary of Commerce Maurice Stans, who went to Greece in 71 and met Pappas and the Greek military junta that was very active with the Nazis in Greece during World War II. They were set up in Greece by our CIA, and then money was sent back by Tom Pappas to put Spiro Agnew as the vice president. I also have signs on an office of the American Nazi Party in California, Reagan for President, and other articles saying that Ronald Reagan and Spiro Agnew are cut out of the same cloth. They would take either one, Ronald Reagan or Spiro Agnew. And the United States poured $1 billion into military hardware into Greece and formed that junta. But the important thing are the links of these Nazis, because Clay Shaw's links to Reinhard Galen and Alan Dulles of the World Nazi Party is what I'm aiming at in opening up these assassinations. I am not going to settle for Eugene Brading or Lauren Hall or Clay Shaw and David Ferry, who are dead, or Oswald, who's dead, because the important thing is that World Nazism not only was involved in killing John Kennedy, Robert Kennedy, and Martin Luther King, they were involved in the Watergate, and they're also involved in violence in California at the present time, and in New York. I'm going to read you an article. This is the one about the Ustashi. This was last Tuesday, the 24th. Bombs ripped the Yugoslav mission. The young Croatian army claimed credit. The Yugoslavian mission to the United States was blown by a bomb, and the Yugoslavians claimed that the police are aware of who carried out this blast, but no arrests have been made. Now, the police departments in New York, Los Angeles, San Francisco, Miami, New Orleans, and Chicago, goodness knows how many other cities, but I can name those, are working with the CIA domestically in the United States and with the Nazis that were sent over to this country in a very systematic way. Their funding can be charted out, their connections can be charted out, and these are not just simple bombings of isolated groups. As a matter of fact, I have a chronology of recent terrorist attacks in Los Angeles and a pamphlet. You can send for some of this information if you want. I'll give you the address. There's a pamphlet prepared by the Political Rights Defense Fund, P.O. Box 57031, Los Angeles, California, 90057. And there are pictures of signs around Los Angeles that were posted saying that one of these says, "The future belongs to the few of us still willing to get our hands dirty. Political terror is the only thing they understand," and it's put out by the National Socialist Liberation Front. Well, terrorism in America isn't coming from the SLA. It isn't coming from the left or the radical group at all. It's coming from groups that are claiming credit not only for being Nazis, but wanting to hurry up this police state. They bombed a conference down at Westwood, where 3,000 people were meeting with the Sons of the Rosenbergs. A Mr. Tomasi admitted, Joe Tomasi admitted, his group, the American Nazi Party, was responsible for the bombing. And this is the same Mr. Tomasi whose group was offered $10,000 in undisclosed funds in 1972 through Hugh Sloan, through Creep, then the Linofsiker, and G. Gordon Liddy at that time and Robert Martin were watching Nazi pictures in the National Archives. Joe Tomasi was given money during the last campaign. He was signing up people for voting. $1,200 found its way to Lieutenant Joe Tomasi, head of the Nazi Party, from John Mitchell and Jeb Magruder. Jeb Magruder is now a full-time religious official for Young Life, continuing his Christian beliefs. But this money that was funded to Joe Tomasi from the Republicans shows that they had a link to the Nazis in California. Recent terrorist attacks in Los Angeles included February 2nd, breaking up the rally at which the Nazi Liberation Front took credit. February the 4th, they broke up the Socialist Worker Party campaign headquarters when a bomb exploded. 2 days later, the Nazi Liberation Front got credit. February the 5th, they signed posters on the political terror. February the 7th, the Long March bookstore received a bomb threat. 40 people in the building were evacuated. February 13th, a chemical was sloshed on the floor of a classroom at California State University where a Cuban film was being shown. February 19th, a bomb was placed in the doorway of the Socialist Workers' Party. February 22nd, a bomb exploded at the KCET service, the radio broadcasting station. The Los Angeles Times received an anonymous call saying the counter-revolutionary Cuban exiles did it. Dynamite bombs were set off February 26th at the offices of the Palestine Voice. In police, March 23rd, they received a call that a bomb was aroof on the roof of the committee to reopen the Rosenberg case. April 12th, a pipe bomb was exploded from the roof of the building where the Rosenberg committee was housed. April 5th, a powerful bomb exploded the Hollywood office of the Iraqi Airways. I have 5 minutes to go into the details. There's still more bombings. April the 10th, April the 13th, night attacks. Unidos bookstore ripping a hole in the center. Called the Cuban Counter-Revolutionaries. You see the Alpha of 66, the Bay of Pigs group that got together also have organizations in California, and they were working with E. Howard Hunt and the White House team. They've never been prosecuted or exposed. A firebomb was set May 7th at the Midnight Special bookstore. The bomb was extinguished by two people before it did serious damage. That's just a rundown of a few of the bombings. There's been a request from Don Fried and people in Los Angeles to ask Mayor Tom Bradley to stop this bombing. There's a brochure called Stop the Bombing, Arrest the Right-Wing Terrorists. But the right-wing terrorists are funded by people high up in government. They're not isolated, and they have the security of the police department, or else they wouldn't continue to do it. There are no arrests. Nobody's trying to stop them, and they're pretty smug about it. As a matter of fact, members of the Nazi Party have claimed that the police let them go ahead. They don't really care. The local Nazis not only admitted bombing the Socialist Workers' Party and the Rosenberg rally, but Mr. Tomasi, who was meeting with agents directly linked to John Mitchell and Jeb Magruder at the time of the election, said that capitalism is dead and it's on its way out, that the Nazi government is the only thing that will hold up, and they will continue with the violence. It said that they don't want to force one breed of culture or personality on another, and that they would just as soon send all blacks back to Africa. We brought them here, and we should send them black. Tomasi and another head of the Nazi Party, Mr. Kiel, are active in California, and they would go for extermination if ships aren't sent to send the blacks back to Africa. I have a lot of vicious literature here by them. They're called the Provisional Wing. They're all ex-military people. They're well-trained. They have contact with military people, and they said they will continue infiltrating. What they said is, we will infiltrate groups and gather information on activists, such as the Socialist Worker Party, the Communist Party, the Young Social Alliance, the Young Workers Liberation League, the NAACP. They said that they will... they see whites as an occupied people, and they have to save them, and they will use guerrilla underground tactics, and they're infiltrating organizations, and they will eventually kill off the blacks. I think of the killing of Dr. Foster in the Bay Area and the killing of Popeye Jackson and the white Aryan Knights claiming credit for it, and the police just simply can't find the real killers. They're not looking, and these people have total control, and he says in his brochure that the police department aren't going to bother them. That is a link to the White House Watergate team before, and the same people that were funding money to the Nazis in Greece through Tom Pappas to come back to Richard Nixon, Spiro Agnew, send money to California to the Nazi Party, and they also were working with Clay Shaw and David Ferry in New Orleans at the time of the killing of John Kennedy. Well, I just have 2 minutes to go. I'm not going to have time to go into the National Tatler article. There are many points in there. It also even brings up the subject of the killing of J. Edgar Hoover. That's another subject I've talked about on KLRB many times. But the important thing is that the faces of the men on the cover of the issue, it says, these men murdered President John Kennedy. Lauren Hall, Eugene Hill Brading, Clay Shaw, David Ferry, and Oswald. Oswald was the link of the CIA to the FBI in this matter. David Ferry and Clay Shaw worked for the Central Intelligence Agency. Brading was the link of organized crime, and Lauren Hall worked with William Seymour and the anti-Castro Cuban community, so that the Mafia, the CIA, the FBI, and the Cuban community that were involved in the killing of John Kennedy have these five representatives on the cover of Tatler, and there's about a 10-page article filled with information. Get that. It's July 13th, 1975. I won't have to read it on the air if you do your homework and read the Tatler. Well, we ran along pretty fast this week. For those of you in San Luis Obispo, you'll get used to the pace, I hope, and the names, I hope, will come familiar to you, and you'll continue to listen and have a pencil handy. And if it went too fast, you can buy tape cassettes of these shows or order the 7-inch reels by writing to KLRB, California. Take care of yourselves this week, and I'll see you next week on Dialogue Conspiracy from Carmel, California.
This has been Dialogue Conspiracy with political research specialist Mae Brussel, who for 10 years has been researching the facts behind political assassinations and conspiracies in this country. Dialogue Conspiracy originates with KLRB-FM in Carmel, California.